Yep. Good morning. It is Monday, April 13th, 2009, North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing room. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission. This is our, it's our regular biweekly meeting, but not on our regular day. Because of some scheduling conflicts and the fact that we haven't had one in a while, we decided to hold it this morning. It is 10 a.m. This is Commissioner Tony Clark. I am substituting for El Presidente Commissioner Kevin Kramer, who is in the air right now, so unfortunately cannot be here. I will be making his motions. Commissioner Kalk?
Just thank everyone for coming today, and thoughts go out for those that are still battling the floods around the state.
Amen. Moving to items, first, the consent agenda. I would move the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Moving to items in Commissioner Kramer's portfolio, KC1, I move the commission approve revision number 7 to surface coal mining permit number NACT-0201 held by the Coteau Properties Company for the Freedom Mine to identify the next 5-year coal removal areas and to update mining and reclamation plans in the permit.
Second.
In December of last year, 2008, the Coteau Properties Company filed their application for revision number 7 to surface coal mining permit NACT-0202. This revision identifies the next 5-year coal removal areas and addressed items requested by the Reclamation Division during our pre-renewal review of the permit. It updates legal ownership, right of entry, and business entity compliance information in the permit. The sections dealing with surface and groundwater and soil resources, operation plans including pit layout, transportation facilities and surface water management plans and post-mining land use plans. The Reclamation Division has completed its review and respectfully recommends that it be approved.
All in favor?
Aye. KC2, I move the Commission approve renewal number 1 to surface coal mining permit NACT-0202 held by the Coteau Property Company for the Freedom Mine to extend the permit term on the existing permit area for another 5 years until April 14th, 2014.
Second.
This will allow them to continue to conduct mining operations within the existing permit area until, as the motion indicates, April 14th, 2014. It totals approximately 17,051 acres. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of the 5-year permit and respectfully recommends that it be approved. As part of this, the review, I would just note that our Reclamation Division continues to look at what the adequate performance bonding amounts are, and that review is currently on file. Currently, self and collateral bonds that the Freedom Mine hold total over $88 million.
All in favor?
Aye. KC3, I move the Commission grant the joint motion of Saddle Butte Pipeline LLC and 3 affiliated tribes to indefinitely continue the informal hearing scheduled for February 11, 2009, indefinitely extend the deadline for Saddle Butte Pipeline LLC to serve and file any response to comments and requests by the 3 affiliated tribes and Arrow Pipeline LLC, and indefinitely delay a decision on the pending request by 3 affiliated tribes for hearing case number PU08923.
Second.
That is quite a sentence. Results from a request that the commission received just recently, actually, to indefinitely extend the that February 11th hearing that we had scheduled. Both parties, all 3 parties, 3 affiliated tribes, the Saddle Butte and Arrow, have indicated to the commission that they are continuing to negotiate and would appreciate more time before holding our hearing.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items in Commissioner Kramer's portfolio. Moving to my portfolio, TC1, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the joint application of Empower LLC and Otter Tail Corporation for transfer of certificate of site compatibility number 9 and for transfer of corridor certificate number 106 and route permit number 116 to Otter Tail Corporation for its ownership of 49.5 megawatt phase 2 portion of the Laverne Wind Farm and Associated Transmission Facilities in Barnes and Steele Counties, North Dakota, case number PU0973 and PU09136.
Second.
This is simply a notice of opportunity for this, and if we receive any word back, then we can schedule something at that point.
All in favor?
Aye. TC2, I move the commission adopt the order granting partial certificate transfer and issue certificates of site compatibility to authorize the transfer of ownership to Ottertail Corporation of a 48-megawatt portion of the Ashtabula Wind Energy Center in Barnes County, North Dakota, case number PU0953.
Second.
As you may recall, the commission had previously cited this particular wind farm, the Ashtabula Wind Farm, which has been under construction, and I think it's going to be operating very soon if it's not already. It is spinning right now. The commission has also issued and approved an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity for Ottertail to own 32 of those turbines, which total 48 megawatts. And in addition to doing that, of course, once they actually take physical ownership of them, having been granted the certificate of public convenience and necessity, we need to then transfer the site permit itself to Ottertail so that they have ultimate responsibility under the site compatibility. And so this order will do that. Obviously, the commission looked at Ottertail's ability to comply with and meet the terms and conditions of the siting certificate, and there are no problems there.
All in favor?
Aye.
TC3 has been withheld from the agenda. TC4, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to one day, and assess a filing fee of $85,000 due upon filing of application in case number PU09151, Elite Inc.'s proposed Bison 1 wind project in Oliver and Morton counties, North Dakota.
Second.
Of course, we always like it when Minnesota-based companies name projects Bison and invest here in the great state of North Dakota. This is Elite does business as Minnesota Power. This is an interesting project for a number of reasons, but specifically Minnesota Power is proposing that the commission approve 75.9 megawatt Bison 1 wind project, which will be located in Oliver and Morton counties. Now, they're going to be building this over a couple of phases. One of the things that might catch your eye is 75.9 megawatts is actually under the siting threshold of 100 megawatts set in state law. However, Minnesota Power does anticipate that eventually this will be part of a bigger project, which will be more than 100 megawatts and probably significantly more than 100 megawatts. And so they're coming in at this time to site this particular project from the ground up, which I personally appreciate. I think we could probably get into some wranglings about whether they should or shouldn't, and then you have to go back and try to site a farm that's already built. But having them come in and just at the on the ground floor site the project, even though at this date it'll be under 100 megawatts, is certainly appreciated by me, and I believe probably the whole commission. As I indicated, Minnesota Power is planning on building this project in two phases, with 16 turbines, or about 37 megawatts, in service by 2010, 17 turbines, or another 39 megawatts, in service by 2011, and as I indicated, because they are eventually going to exceed 100 megawatts, they're citing it right now. Minnesota Power is requesting commission approval for the initial wind development. In addition, to interconnect the project, Minnesota Power is going to construct, in 2010, a 230 kV transmission line from a new substation at the Bison 1 wind project to the Square Butte substation. However, they have not applied for that right now. They probably in the next few months will be sending us a separate letter of intent for the transmission line. This is a kind of an intriguing project, and one that I think is being watched probably regionally and nationally, because eventually all of the wind energy that will be delivered to the Square Butte substation will be delivered to Minnesota via the existing DC transmission line that runs from Oliver County to all the way into to northern Minnesota. But that's being phased in over the course of a number of years. As you may recall, the power from the Milton R. Young station currently goes over that line, and eventually Minnesota Power will take nothing but wind over that particular line and drop it into their service territory in Minnesota, and then Minn Kota will take all of the coal-generated power, eventually probably construct an AC line to hook up that particular power plant. So that's in the process of being converted over, but certainly wind power via DC is something which is not used in a widespread fashion across the country, but this could be a harbinger of things to come.
If I could, a couple comments on that,
please, Tony.
Yeah. It's become common practice of the commission, and I don't disagree with it, to always waive the one-year waiting period between the filing of the letter of intent and the siting application to one day. And I don't think I'm going to disagree with that. But I just need to put out there to the folks that just because you waive that 1 year down doesn't mean you're not going to need to do all the things that you have to do with the Fish and Wildlife Service, with all the landowners, because the number of wind projects coming through this commission is going to be steady if increasing. And just because we're waiving this time doesn't mean we're not going to do any less thorough of a job. And in my time here in the commission now, 100 days worth, it just seems like there's a lot of issues that are coming up that this commission is going to be dealing with. And just got to continually put that out there that it's a standard procedure to waive it, but it doesn't mean we're going to cut any circles to make sure they're done properly.
That's right. And I think we've been clear both from the commission and staff standpoint that while we'll do what we can and waive these timelines when able, you know, if we get hit with a rush of applications, we get to them when we're physically able to get to them. And you shorten some of these time periods at your own peril. Once you get in the queue, we'll, like I said, we'll do what we can. But
and that's not to say that we haven't done anything correctly. It's just that my observation has been that everyone here does a great job. And the commission has asked for some more support in certain areas, and we'll see if we get that or not. But we're going to do everything we can, but there's only so much that folks can do, and we will not cut any corners to do these things correctly.
Right. I should indicate that this initial phase of the project, the 75.9 megawatt project, is expected to cost approximately $171 million. They expect to file their site application permit in May of 2009, so about in the next month or so, and hope to gain approval later this summer, September of 2009.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items of my portfolio, Commissioner.
I only have two items today. The first one, BK2. I move the commission adopt the order approving electric service area agreement and issue certificate of public convenience and necessity number 5394 to Montana Dakota Utilities Company, authorize the extension of electric services to customers in areas around the city of Stanley as established by the service area agreement, case numbers PU09-39 and PU0940.
Second.
This basically is the final step in work the commission's been doing with MDU and the Montreal Williams Electric Co-op. Back in January, a joint application was filed and approving a service area agreement between these two organizations. February 11th, we issued a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, notice of opportunity. For those wishing to comment, we did not have any comments. On March 25th, we had our own meeting, and we felt that this agreement met the requirements, avoided misunderstanding and disagreements for future growth. We also accomplished the legislative intent of making sure we don't have establish harmony and operate efficiency among electric providers. And finally, both parties agree with this. I think it's a good idea.
It's always good, and we can see one of these as opposed to a TIA case in front of the commission. And this is, we've probably approved about a half dozen of these so far, and some with I believe each of the companies. MDU, this is their second, at least. We've done a number with Otter Tail. XL, have we? Maybe not XL? Yeah. I can't recall. Not yet with XL. We're waiting on that one. And or more. But again, always good to see this statute that was authorized by the legislature used by the companies to serve North Dakotans better.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And the final item I have today, BK3, I move the commission find the March 18th, 2009 complaint filed by Polar Communication Mutual Aid Corporation states a prima facie case and serve the complaint on the respondents, Quest Corporation and the State of North Dakota Information Technology Department in case number PU09111.
Second.
See if I can try to explain this one here. I had to talk to legal folks what exactly prima facie meant. But basically, that means that there are enough facts that the commission look into this further, what some of the concerns are by polar communication. And basically what it comes down to is the Polarcom is a corporation or a telecom up in the northeastern part of the state, Park River Exchange, Hoople Exchange. Quest is a Colorado corporation that works in North Dakota. And, of course, the ITD is for the state of North Dakota. There's agreements that the local phone calls, there's no fees set up. And basically the state of North Dakota is potentially able to make phone calls from outside of that region at no cost because they're able to share that exchange back and forth. So what this will do is we'll send this out to the folks, to Quest and to the ITD department within this week. They'll have 20 days to respond with what's going on. Within that period of time, we'll more than likely schedule a hearing, and we'll look into this and see if in fact it does take place.
From what I can tell, it relates to, at least in the complaint, it relates to extended area service, which is something which has caused issues in past cases that the commission has had. I mean, basically, EAS is an agreement where two exchanges which would normally perhaps pay long distance enter into an agreement so that there are free local calls between those exchanges, Polar is appeared to be alleging in this case is that traffic is coming into one exchange and then using EAS to make a local call from there be transferred and then access charges aren't paid. They're alleging that was never intended and shouldn't be a part of EAS. You recall that was a big part of the case, although it's a somewhat, I mean, these are different facts, but that was a part of what arose in the whole call smart issues. You had EAS towns around, say, Bismarck, Dickinson, others calling in and then using those services to make long-distance calls from there. So with an IP-based world, it makes a lot of things possible that probably weren't contemplated in the traditional old telephone world.
And this will be interesting to see how this plays out because I suspect that whatever we decide in this case may have impacts in other areas around the state. So this, I'm sure, will be watched by lots of folks.
You bet.
And all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That concludes the items in my portfolio.
Very good. Upcoming events, I don't have my agenda with me. Esther, do you have that?
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Cap and Trade Summit this Friday, which I know will be of interest to a number of folks and certainly encourage you to attend. as far as formal hearings that we have upcoming, of course, April 28th, we have the Rough Rider 1 LLC hearing in Dickey County. That's going to be in Ellendale at the Fireside Restaurant, 10 a.m. Other meetings this afternoon. At noon, we're going to be having another public input session related to the Otter Tail rate increase. We will be here. The commission will be here. We'll be using interactive video. The live site we'll be hooked up with is in Wahpeton. We're rescheduling that, of course, because of flood efforts in Wahpeton were ongoing at the time that we had our previous hearing, and we did have a specific request from a consumer to reschedule that, so we're happy to do that. As I indicated, April 17th, 9 a.m. here in the state capitol, Brynhild Haugland Room, the Carbon Cap and Trade Consumer Impact Summit, and other items are listed in the agenda as well. Are there any questions? Well, there certainly can be. The main advantage that we hear is over long distances, it's often an efficient way to take care of the power. DC, one of the things about it is it's sometimes, I heard it described once, as it's sort of like a wormhole in the system. I mean, it's a way to transport the power from one spot to one spot and dump it in where you want it specifically. If you build AC lines, what happens is it affects everywhere on the grid immediately, right at that point of injection, because the electrons flow wherever they flow. If you get a DC line, it's sort of like the fast lane on the highway. It just dumps it right into where you want it, and it obviously has local impacts where you drop it in, but it gets you around a lot of congestion issues that you might otherwise have. It's really a way to, for example, just leapfrog right over congestion and get a significant amount of power out without having to worry about some of those constraints that you might otherwise have.
Would it be fair to say, too, though, that there is a negative that if you have DC going somewhere and you need to pull some off, you can't easily convert it somewhere else along the way. So this is power that couldn't be benefited
along
the way.
Yeah,
so there's pros and cons both ways.
Yeah, it's something that companies definitely, you know, cost out, because that conversion from AC to DC and back to AC is an expensive process, and you have to build the right equipment on both ends, and so companies don't enter it lightly. But it's something that's being talked about nationally because of the potential that you could get large amounts of wind power from the upper Midwest, North Dakota, and other states that have wind-rich resources and transport them efficiently and drop them into markets further east, you know, perhaps Chicago, or even further east than that. And that's where you get the efficiencies out of it and might potentially make it more cost feasible to build those converters on the end.
Now this is 75.9 megawatts, you said? So
that's correct.
Far.
Yep.
Is this the same project that we're talking about, potentially of 1,000 megawatts?
Well, there was a 1,000 megawatt project that FPL has proposed, and we have a letter of intent for, not an application for yet, I don't believe yet, and it's in that same general area. The project that Minnesota Power is constructing, they've told us in their hearing when they came in before that it's not that particular project, so it's not to be considered as part of that. I think when they came in for just an informal meeting with us, they were thinking that they were going to be in the neighborhood of 400 to 600 megawatts. Is that right, Jerry? I don't recall off the top of my head. Eventually, they're...
what happened was they had another project proposed that was, I'm thinking, 125 megawatts, but they filed a letter of intent with us for... that was over by the Milton R. Young plant. And instead of that one, they've decided to pursue this one now, which is further west and south of that area. And they'll run a transmission line then over back over to the Milton R. Young plant where that substation is. They did not want to withdraw their letter of intent for the other project with the, I think it was 125 megawatts, because they weren't sure if they were going to do that one too later, but this is the one they want to do now.
Sure. And considering that they're going to be converting a significant DC line over, I mean, it will be sort of a sole wind power line. I think everyone's expecting that there's going to be more power that'll be developed. I mean, you obviously wouldn't convert a whole DC line that's currently supporting a 500 megawatt coal plant and then only put 75 megawatts of wind on it. So I think we can expect that there will be more development in the area, wherever it comes from.
Do you remember offhand how long that DC line is?
It's a couple hundred miles. I can't remember if it's in the... It drops in the Iron Range. Let me see. I don't recall if it says in the application. Jerry, do you remember?
I don't think it did. But from here to Duluth, basically.
And would they have an AC line then from the Young plant to Duluth, or
Not to Duluth. What would happen is once the transaction between Minn Kota and Minnesota Power is worked out, Minn Kota will be the sole recipient of the coal power coming from Milton R. Young, and so the AC line that they'll be constructing would probably be towards their service territory. I don't know that we know exactly where yet, but that's the valley and to the northeast. Jerry, is that?
Well, we have a staff meeting to discuss that this afternoon.
Okay. We'll know more at 3.
It's into the Red River Valley.
But suffice it to say, this is an interesting change because you've got one power company that's going to just take all the coal-fired power from Minn Kota, or from Milton R. Young, and the other one's going to do basic wind.
Yeah, it is, and it's in a lot of ways, like I said, it's an intriguing project from a lot of angles. But you know, Minnesota Power is under mandates in Minnesota to get a lot more renewable wind power and other renewables into their grid. So they're looking to meet their mandates in Minnesota, which are very aggressive, and they're doing it with the best wind resource that's available in the region, which is here in the Dakotas, and they have existing infrastructure here, and so they can use that DC line. Minn Kota does business, of course, in both North Dakota and Minnesota, but is and has been participant in other wind projects in North Dakota. But for their profile, they have indicated that they really believe that they still want to continue to use Milton R. Young for their baseload power. So it seems to work well for both companies. From a North Dakota perspective, it's a lot of investment, on both ends of it, both from the renewable resource end and from keeping a very low-cost power, viable power station open, in addition to transmission investment. So it seems to be one of those situations that everybody's getting what they need out of it, and we'll look forward to future filings in the case.
But I suspect the mandates are a driver in some of this decision, because when they put all the wind on one line, then they can easily measure how much wind is being transmitted, and I think that's always been one of the problems with these mandates, is how do you measure what percent is actually coming from renewable or not. So what they're probably doing is, this is just my purely speculation, but they're giving themselves something they can always measure, and they can always say, we have this percentage. But as Commissioner Clark said, hey, it's good for North Dakota, keep building stuff here.
Yeah, and Minnesota Power is an interesting company just from a load profile standpoint. They are very, very industrial heavy. Most utilities, I think, when we had a meeting with them, if you sort of split it up, they tended to be fairly balanced between commercial, industrial, residential. With Minnesota Power, I don't remember the exact percentage that's industrial, but it's very heavy on the industrial side, and which is unusual for utility companies to have that amount of weight. And the reason is because they're not a huge utility from a standpoint of number of customers served. They're kind of the northeast corner of Minnesota, but the industries that they have, taconite mining, those types of industries are huge energy users, and wood mills, things like that. So they're an industrial heavy business, and you need a reliable source of wind power so you can cut down on some of the intermittency problems. So using this line for that and North Dakota wind, which has high capacity factor, seems to work well. Okay. Thank you. We'll take a 5-minute break for signing and be back at 10:35.